over the wetlands.
Call the committee to order. Clerk will note the roll. In the search, you approval of the 10th meeting of the Rules Committee. In discussion, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Minutes are just on the agenda's calendar for the day. Representative Johnson will approve the calendar of the day for Tuesday, April 19th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Calendar is adopted. Next, members, there's a couple of bills that pursuant to Rule 2.03 that typically have come through the committee in terms of having this deadline. I do not see Mike Beard here. I do see Representative Coles here.
Oh. Most of us see you.
Well, Representative Coles. Representative Coles, if you could go first. Chair will move that House File 2279 be recommended to pass, and can you explain why it is before the committee, Representative Coles?
Mr. Chair and members, House File 2279 is here before the committee because there was some confusion. There still is some confusion on the part of our committee staff as to whether the bill properly made deadline in the Senate and therefore whether whether it properly made deadline in the House. It did pass to the Senate floor. It's on their general orders calendar. The bill is non-controversial, passed out of environment policy, supported by Bowser. Good thing for the people of Clone. I appreciate member support.
Any questions for Representative Coles? Is this bill go anywhere else, Representative Coles? Or?
Just to the floor, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Seeing no other discussion, Mr. Chair, use the motion of the House File 2279 to recommend to pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Next is House File 2129. The Chair will move the House File 2129 be recommended to pass. Representative Beard, please explain why the bill is for the committee.
Members, Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that originally was an electronic wagering adjustment to allow Canterbury Park to move and accept payment, I guess, for sending their telecast signal around the world. And there was some conflicting signals, no pun intended, from Canterbury as to whether they wanted that to go this year, next year, whatever. So it didn't get into the gaming subcommittee. And then I wanted to pull the tournament thing off. And in the confusion about whether we were going to do electronic wagering, lifting the limits on telecasting that they could actually get paid for it. Right now they give it away for free. The whole thing missed the gaming subdivision and regulated industries. So we just brought it straight to reg industries and asked it to go through the rules. It has amended, which is just the tournament table on the plate. It's convoluted, Mr. Chairman. I had four bills up that day. So it was,
okay. Questions for Representative Beard. Representative Carlson.
So this this question is just unclear. As a fan of the gaming subcommittee, where all the things related to the other question I have, and I assume by your point that that's what you had said earlier, but all the other gaming bills are now going through the tax committee. That that's where they all are.
Mr. Chairman, 2 years ago when we passed this provision, actually we lifted the limits all entirely. We actually didn't have a tax provision in the bill. This year there is no money attached to this bill. It's not merely lifting the tournament play and the table limits. It's temporary, and it's not imposing any taxes or any additional revenue to the state, other than what would naturally accrue through their corporate income taxes, which they gladly pay. So I respectfully disagree with the motion.
Okay, any other questions for Representative Beard?
Representative Carlson. My main point is that that's where all the other gaming bills seem to be sitting right now. And I think it would be important for it to go there. I also, quite frankly, have a concern relative to regulating the gaming that hasn't gone through the entire committee process. One that sits out on the House floor would maybe germane to the bill relative to other issues. So I think it's important that
up with all of the decisions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I concur. Just a question for the author. Where is the Senate bill? Is that moving along in a timely process? Has that made it through deadline? And just inquiring on the status of the Senate file.
Representative Beard.
Chairman, I'm a little uncertain. I know the TV bill is not moved in the Senate, but the delete all amendment that it just left at the card table limits is introduced over there, and I'm not sure where it is in the station. What station stop is that at this moment?
Representative,
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I think that'd be important to know. I don't know if anybody can just run quick and pop on a computer. It's pretty easy to find out where that's at.
I don't know if someone wants to pop on the computer. Representative Cole.
Mr. Chair, to Representative Carlson's point, Representative Beard, help me again understand this. Does this have revenue implications?
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cole, no, there are no revenue implications to the state. And if I can just step one more step and to the Gaming Commission, it is a subdivision of regulated industries. This did appear.
I thought one of your discussion with me is you said this did pass out of the Gaming Committee, so that's why.
Chairman, no, actually it did not pass out of the Gaming Committee. It passed out of
regular industries. Okay.
Gaming Division had met and completed their calendar, and the Gaming Division Chair just recommended that we go straight to the full committee.
Okay, so it did have a hearing in the Policy Committee of Regular Industries.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Very extensively.
Mr. Chair, I know that Representative Prinke has indicated that any gaming-related bill that has a revenue implication, he wants to see in his committee. I serve on that committee. I don't believe he's made any indication that he feels an interest in seeing bills that don't have revenue implications. So I guess I'm at this point willing to support the author's request that this go to the floor. But I don't know if other members. Have another opinion on that, but Representative Krinke made it clear in committee on more than one occasion that any gambling bill that has revenue implications, he does want to see, and I'm sure he would pull it off the floor if that were the case.
Yeah, and I guess my preference, Representative Carlson, would be just to send the bill on, and then if we can talk to Representative Krinke, if he'd like to see it in taxes, he certainly has the right to do that. But Representative Junkie?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to reference to the author. Representative Beard, we're hearing there's no revenue implications, but can you explain going from 50 to 90 tables, wouldn't that affect revenue somewhere along the line? Isn't that more income? Even if it's corporate revenue, it is a revenue implication, is it not, by increasing the number of tables, almost doubling them out there?
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, again, yes, and to the extent that it affects their corporate bottom line and the corporate taxes they file with the state every year. It would, but that would be just like my business. I would submit if I sell a few more aircraft, a half dozen books, my income goes up, and I don't have to ask any permission, I guess, to pay more taxes, just in general business activity growing. But there is no specific tax that's put on this request that would have any specific revenue that would come to the state that can be targeted. And it is conceivable that in the course of doing business, their expenses could go up as well, and maybe their tax payments on their total corporate activity could go down. To Representative Junkie's point. So it's other than what's in normal course of business, up or down, or expenses and income, you know, there is no clear-cut revenue picture to the state.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, again, I do think there is some revenue implications there. We can't surmise until we see a fiscal note on it. And also, I don't think anyone in here, it's not a mystery to anyone, that there is some controversy over this, too. Regardless of which side you're on, they are not charged a gaming fee on those. They are not taxed on the card club at this point in time. And certainly, I know that discussion is going to be had. Now, whether it's had down in Representative Prinke's committee or on the House floor, it will be had when this bill comes around. And I would think you'd want to have that down in a committee rather than having a couple-hour floor fight on those types of issues, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson.
Chair, maybe the author can mention this as well, but what is the implication here for the potential for the second card club in Elk County? What would be the revenue implications there as well?
Representative Beard.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you asked me for gave my remarks to why in my busyness and case I didn't make the deadline with the gaming division or what have you. But if you'd like me to step over there a little bit, I could, in that the constitutional amendment, I'm understanding, could authorize two horse racing facilities in the state of Minnesota. The Racing Commission does permit things like this to happen at a second track, which may or may not be built somewhere on the north side of the city. My the process that this bill lays out complies with current statute, that they don't automatically get maintenance tables, but they are automatically entitled to apply to the Racing Commission for 90, up to 90 tables. They get the Racing Commission at the end of the day, Mr. Chairman, committee members, to approve the 90, and anything that could conceivably or possibly happen on the north side of town, they would play by the same procedure and apply to the Racing Commission for one table or up to 90 tables.
Mr. Chairman, I just heard references to something like a 2-1 ratio if that were to happen. I happen to concur, and I think unfortunately there isn't a concurrence. There is a revenue potential impact here, and we unfortunately don't have a fiscal note. I think gaming is a big enough issue any time, but especially this legislative session where it probably would be a good idea to talk about the potential fiscal ramifications. You know, the obvious place right now is the tax committee, because that's where all the other gaming bills are currently housed. And if it's as simple as what the author says, it probably will make it out of the tax committee, but I think that discussion should appropriately take place in one of the revenue committees. And that's the only revenue committee, really, where gaming is still under potential discussion.
Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to make a habit of answering my own questions, but somebody did pop on the computer. So for members, I have an update for you. The Senate file is stationary in Representative Vickerman's committee, introduced, I believe, on the same day on March 29th as this bill was introduced, as I see on the top of the sheet. And for newer members such as myself, just serving on rules for the first time, if this bill was sent to taxes, there are no deadline implications. They could have a hearing in there and get it sent to the floor without any other process. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
I believe that's correct, Representative.
I would ask members to oppose the Carlson motion to refer the bill to taxes. I think if Representative Krenke, who is not a fan of some of the gaming proposals, certainly would like to look at the bill, I think that the body or the Speaker or others would talk with him and probably grant that request. But I'm not aware that he has answered the bill. So. Any other discussion? All in favor of the Carlson motion to pass the bill and re-refer it to the committee on taxes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail.
Division
has been called. Those in favor of the motion. All those opposed, please raise your hand. There being 9 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. We now are on the original motion to pass the bill without re-referral. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Beard.
Thank you, members.
Members, next we'll move on to the House budget. With the House budget, Representative Mr. Schweitz.
Thank you, Mr. Schweitz.
Mr. Schweitz, I know you have a packet of information in members' folders, but if you could please proceed and maybe walk us through.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I believe there is an overview of the budget.
Now that is correct.
I'd like to start with the budget overview. Again, from record, I'm Paul Schweitz, the House Controller. I'm here today to be requested to approve the House budget for fiscal year 06 and 07. I realize we may have limited time, so I wanted to skip a lot of the information already down in the overview. First of all, with the overview, the spending history for the House in fiscal year 04 was actually, the actual spending for fiscal year 04 was actually lower fiscal year 0011. There's a chart that shows that. I think what that really shows is a clear pattern by the House in the past several years of moving government to reduce our expenses. There's a chart in the packet in terms of spending this year, 97. The chart in the following page shows that our spending has posted an excellent appropriation. And both corporations have resulted in some very poor balances. And that balance will be the debt that at least in 97, and I really think that would be able to do that. The next two charts show spending by category in each of the last two fiscal years. I want to give you this chart to show how it is that how it's going to be spent. About 62% is spent on permanent staff. 28% is spent on member salaries and expenses. 7% on equipment and computer supplies, stationery, all those major contracts. And between 2 and 3%. And temporary staff costs. Again, you can infer in the context of changing funding levels and administering the first of the year. Also, being respectful of the needs of members and staff. In the past, we made budget reductions by keeping positions open and reducing work hours through attrition and voluntary absence. These changes were made by maintaining high levels of service for members, constituents, and the public while maintaining and improving our capacity to the next lot. There has been no increase in member salaries since 1995. Many staff continue to work long overtime hours, yet have not received a base salary increase since September of 2003. That brings us to to some budget pressures facing the House. Again, as I mentioned, House employees really need some pay increases. There's a chart which compares what shows our overall staff pay increases. Which, rather, not the numbers, really, case you don't find it. But this shows that, again, our last increase in September of 2002 was 3%. Staff received no further increases in either FY04 or FY05, although there was a one time increase, monthly increase, in fiscal year 04. Compared to the executive branch, I didn't complete the chart, but it shows that for those 2 years when the House received no increase to base, the executive branch showed increases of between 2.75 and 3.5% increases each year for approximately 60% of their employees. So that is one of the budget pressures that we face. Additional budget pressures are the health insurance increases for members. That's going to have to reach an increase of about 15% in each of the next 2 years, and the same for staff. Also, projected to reach 15% increase in each of the next 2 years. Another budget pressure has been retirement contributions for members. There was a statutory change a few years ago in which 50 members' retirement plans would shift the expense of those retirement plans to the House. There was no matching appropriation to go with that statutory change. So that's something we have to look at in our budget. The government has proposed another budget reduction of 2.5% in the next 2 years. There have been increases in member cost increases. As you know, the per diem was increased to $66 per day. Retirement budgets were restored to previous levels. Increase in lodging reimbursements have all gone to increase our budget expenses. And finally, member staffing. The number of members and member salaries are statutorily determined. So that's, again, that's either 28% or a portion of that is really not something that we can do from a budget standpoint. My overall budget recommendations are, again, to provide staff pay increases. If additional funds are not available, then I recommend that we enact a change in law to allow for the extended use of the legislative carry system. We should make reductions in permanent staffing only through attrition, eliminate positions as they become vacant. And also we could fill some permanent positions as special only as they become vacant. We continue to invest in technology to improve services, providing increased levels of public outreach, improving efficiencies and structures. For example, one of the increasing technologies is the implementation of voice over IP telephone system. We plan to make that change very early in the next fiscal year, which would your telephone will connect will connect to the computer. And for all staff, we project some significant cost savings to implement that. We will need, however, to rely on our carry forward in order to fund these initiatives. That chart also shows the authorized staffing levels by department. I saw some changes in expenditures experienced by other forms of government. For comparison, again, as I said earlier, the House in 2004 was spending at about 2,000 levels. Yet we do see significant increases in other general fund appropriations overall, and the next chart by state agency operation budgets, other state agencies have somehow managed to increase their funding from 2000 to 2004, as shown in the chart. Finally, the last page in the budget overview gives a summary of the funding challenges that I just referred to. Staff increases depending on the amount of supervised community, $1.1 to $1.2 million in reported finance. The government proposed $1.3 million reduction. The insurance cost increases for staff of about $1 million. For the insurance increased cost for members of $600,000. And increased to base spending for member expenses of somewhere over $500,000. With that, I'd like to move into the proposed health budget for FY06 to show how we can recommend that by cutting everything I could except for permanent staffing and making reductions everywhere I could find. I found the minimum funding needs for us to continue at our current operations with current staffing levels would be $54,834,000. Yet the government proposed funding level is only at $15,806,000. I propose that we fill the gap between our minimum needs and the government's recommendation by relying on spending down our carry forward balance of approximately $4.1 million. So at that level we would be $1.2 million below the base for the previous financial. Even at that minimum level, this funding level is really to operate. But it will require some continued sacrifices as we go through the budget. We will, however, be able to maintain and perform our core functions and accomplish our mission. But it will leave us with little financial flexibility over binding. The staff salary increases that I have built into the budget, I built that at 2% as a cost of living adjustment in each of the next two fiscal years. As well as, I also have built in an increase going back to 05, going back to January, of between 1 and 3%, depending on how long the permanent staff have been here. To recognize employees who have been here longer, can get to 3%, or more recent employees, somewhere 0 or 1%. The budget does include the member and staff benefits. The budget does not include an increase for legislator salaries. I mention that because any increase in legislator salaries has to be appropriated before it can go into effect. is not included in this budget. You need to add that back if you prefer to do that. The carry forward spending, as I said, we move it, the budget does rely on a proposed change to the carry forward statute, as shown on the last page. It would eliminate, if I can jump to that at this time, it would eliminate one word special, so that would allow us to use the carry forward spending for any cost related to session. As opposed to fund our member of session per diem and temporary staff salaries and with $34. Again, moving on to the next page about proposed reductions and structural changes. This budget does, continues for us to continue previous cost efficiencies. It assumes encouraging voluntary leave passes for all employees. We've taken those, we've projected how much we think we get from that, and we've taken that out of the budget. Continue in-house printing. We've done some small things like replacing the lease equipment with purchase equipment, and we have continued restrictions on miscellaneous services such as cable TV, job ads, pagers, newspapers, and that sort of thing. Second significant budget assumption again is that we would be replacing our current telephone system with the internet telephone system, and that would have to happen early in the next fiscal year in order for us to meet this budget. Again, shift in spending. I believe I just mentioned that this budget assumed that we would shift a significant portion of our spending to the current telephone spending. Budget assumed we would hold an average of 4 permanent position statements over the 2-year period. There is a natural attrition that comes. So no, under this, layoffs are not be required, but we would have to either delay hiring or keep the machine.
Perhaps a little more explanation on that one and what the impact might be on various departments and caucuses.
Mr. Frazier. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Carlson, that is the same policy that we currently have in effect. That at the same budget assumption 2 years ago, what we do is simply as vacancies become available, the budget assumes that overall over the 2 year period that there will be delays in hiring or positions will be held vacant for a period of time. It does require some element of fairness because it is not specific by department. So there's no mandate that any one department would have to hold.
Mr. Chairman, in effect, then a hiring freeze if a vacancy were to come about, and quite frankly, I'm asking that question. Staffing, as you know, for earlier discussions, is very tight within the Democratic caucus. And if there were a vacancy or anything, we would or would not be able to fill that position, Mr. Schweitzer.
Mr. Schweitzer. Mr. Chair, members, with a very tight budget, I really think those decisions would have to be made on a case-by-case basis to rules committee. What this budget assumes is that on average over a 2 year period we will hold 4 positions vacant.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I understand what you're talking about with the assumed average, but my concern is where that average may happen to fall. And we had a lot of discussions earlier in this session about staffing levels, and Mr. Chairman, as you know, some of us on our side of the aisle felt that with some of the changes that things ended up being relatively tight. I don't want to reopen that whole discussion. I just simply want to have an understanding about how that's going to be handled. A vacancy, in other words, falls much harder on our caucus than it would on your caucus, Mr. Chairman, just because the sheer size of the staffing allotments. And if we're talking about an overall average, and for some reason if it fell particularly hard on one caucus or the other, we could talk the same way about a department as well. We had a vacancy among the fiscal analysts. We have, depending on which one, and one thing or another, some difficulty there. And I guess I'm just saying I think we have to be somewhat flexible in understanding of how that may fall, so that it doesn't become an unnecessary burden on either one caucus or one department as we move forward with this. That's what's dangerous about averages, because we don't really talking about where that may fall.
Other questions? Or representatives? Sorry. Mr. Weiss, if you mind, just continue. I think you're almost...
Yeah, that was a concluding comment, because I wasn't expecting him to respond. But.
Mr. Chair, members, the budget also assumes that we may have to defer non-critical furniture and equipment purchases to equipment to the future by NES. And then as far as... The last few bullet items that are under reductions indicate some proposed systematic changes that we will need in the operation of the House regarding department budgets. I propose that because the funding levels are projected to be very tight, I would propose that we establish, monitor, and enforce travel, registration, and training budgets for all health departments, setting travel budgets at approximately the 04-05 level. But I hope to come back to the committee to present some more details on this as we go through. Similarly, with IT budget and also supply and facility budgets for us to establish a little tighter control of those expenditures, given a very tight overall budget.
Mr. Renfrew, there's a series of three questions, actually two questions, and then a comment. Paul, first of all, as you're looking at putting this budget together, in comparison to what the governor recommended to us for the House budget, did the governor not also recommend a size reduction in our operating budget, taking the carry forward account as well?
Mr. Chair, Speaker Swigen, yes, he did. The governor in his budget recommended over $4 million from our carry forward to be taken away, and yet this budget proposal assumes that money would be available to the House.
I just want members to be aware of that.
Yes, sir.
Paul is bringing forward a proposed budget to the House Rules Committee, at least working so far from the governor's budget, which will change with Representative Seifert's unveiling of his bill today or tomorrow or whenever he unveils it. The governor did give us both a reduction in operating costs, operating revenue, as well as the carry forward. So if your budget wasn't worked under the governor's scenario, right, Paul?
That is correct. There is a disconnect. What it does do, though, as far as the operating budget, it is in line with the operating budget. In a net sense, we are treating ourselves the same way as other state agencies were treated. Other state agencies did not have carry forward balances taken away from them, like the governor proposed to do to us. So, yes, I agree with what you said, Mr. Speaker, but I think we can say that this budget does treat us comparably to what other state agencies have been afforded.
And then just two quick comments to members. The first being that I believe very sincerely that our staff, both partisan and nonpartisan staff, deserve some type of a salary merit increase. How we're going to work it through the budget at the end of the day when we see what our budget is going to be on May 23rd, we'll have to have very sharp pencils, I'm sure, Paul. But to the members here, our staff has gone except for that one-time increase, which is inappropriately referred to as a bonus, was more appropriately referred to as a enhanced merit bonus, because we couldn't put it into the base. We just didn't have the dollars put in the base a year ago. This would be the third year now that they've gone without a salary increase.
And I think that the members, both Democrat and Republican, together, we have to find a way to make sure that our staff is recognized in the for a salary increase in the upcoming year. And then the third comment, to just to Representative Carlson, just so you make sure, Representative Carlson, you give some assurance or some comfort that when you talk about opening to positions and keeping vacancies, the minority caucus will be treated very, very evenly and fairly along with the majority caucus. If my memory serves me correctly, during the last summer, I think the majority caucus kept 10 positions open. Is that correct? 13? 13 positions open that were vacant that we did not fill to help the budget of the House. And I believe the minority caucus had one, Jeannie, is that right? Mike, can you tell me? Was it one? So just to give you some comfort, some assurance that we're not trying to do anything inappropriate or squeeze the minority, I think it was 13 then to one in relationship to the vacant positions.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to hear that we will be treated fairly. I fully concur, I think, to go back, there hasn't been a salary increase since 2002, if I recall correctly, so I don't think there's any argument or anything on that. I was concerned about those permanent positions, but I do have to say that, if you'll recall, I think each of the caucuses was given a number, and we opted for reduced time across the board versus the vacancy question, if I recall correctly. And so we did meet our target numbers in terms of savings, just in a little different way. You chose not to fill vacancies. Our folks took a reduced time, if I recall. Am I not correct on that?
You cut positions.
And we reduced time. But at any rate, as long as we're fairly treated on that question, I was going to be interested.
Representative Keller?
Mr. Chairman and the Speaker, I guess we have to remind the Governor sometimes where he came from, right? Because I've forgotten his budget recommendation towards us. I want to echo your comments about staff. People work hard and get good educations to come here and work for us and work with us. And it is public service, but it should not always have to be public sacrifice. And this has been a tough time for these employees who have stuck with us, and I think they deserve our attention to try our very best to find a way to do this.
Mr. Schweitzer, anything else?
Mr. Schweitzer, I don't know if this is a separate issue because I got a series of questions about VoIP and telephones and upfront costs and potential savings and where those savings are coming from, and you know, the savings extrapolated over a number of years, and I don't know if this is the appropriate forum for that or if you have or can prepare something. Just got a lot of questions.
Mr. Chair, I have
Mr. Schweitzer.
And members of the committee, I'd be happy to address those questions, and I think this is the closest thing we have to an appropriate forum. Yes, you're right. This will require a significant investment costs to implement this. The telephone sets themselves, as well as changes to the network, and perhaps some changes to the wiring, because now instead of the phones being plugged into the existing telephone wiring, all the phones will come in through the network and routed over a network. So one of the most significant changes is changes to all the switches in the closets that those have to be enabled to handle voice traffic that is converted to digital. Those are Cisco switches. The plan is for us to go forward with a pilot project immediately. We've already started with the three pilot projects. There's actually some staff are being trained today and tomorrow for that. Assuming that this pilot project is successful, we would then hope to move forward, as I said, over the next fiscal year, but that isn't required yet for us to make the changes in the closet to the switches, as well as all new telephones for all members. We're going through Intertech Group part of the Department Administration. They're moving forward with this statewide for all agencies. For all agencies. The Department of Revenue, for example, has already all converted to digital collection. And there's a flip side to it. The use of carrot of lower rates, the nature of $10 per month. We're currently paying approximately $35 per month for our telephone service that includes voicemail. The $10 also includes.
Just to clarify, is that for local service, no long distance training? That's just basic, your 1FD regular phone service?
Mr. Chair,
that's
correct. So $10 a month, so that's where the big savings comes, the $10 a month versus the $35 per month. There is a one-time expense. And so we're moving forward to get that expense in fiscal year 05 so we can capture the full savings for 06, 07, which are our real tight budget.
Mr. Chair, have we looked at any private vendors? Because I just off the top of my head, I think we could do better than $35 a month for regular phone service.
Mr. Schweitzer.
Mr. Chair, remember that is for our ISDN telephone sets. That we go through the Department Administration. We chose not that 5-6 years ago. We chose that system because it seemed to meet the unique needs of our members the best. But really, we're moving forward now as fast as we can to get rid of that $35 month charge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we know what the initial upfront costs are going to be?
Mr. Schweitzer.
Mr. Chair, yes. If you give me just a minute, as I'm looking for that, I would say that if we don't, the downside is if we don't do this, Intertech has proposed a 25% increase starting July 1 for that $35.
Mr. Chair, maybe we should eliminate Intertech.
Mr. Schweitzer, you can tell there's going to be some continued, I think, questions from some committee members who have a little bit of background in this issue as well, and we may connect you at some point to have some more background discussions about it before.
Mr. Chair,
I think as a subcommittee with Representative Hoppe training this.
I tell you, understood that.
I would suggest Representative Coles hasn't had lunch yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, there are questions on the voice over internet provider service, and particular of interest to me too is how we're going to address security issues. When you dial 911 on a phone, people expect people to find you. We're in fairly large buildings here, and I'm wondering, you don't have to answer now, but again, if we're going to have our subcommittee or whatever we're going to have, I'd like some of that addressed, because a lot of us are here late at night. You can imagine a member having a health problem late at night dialing 911 and not being found. Certainly we've had incidents where the public has come in and gotten into members' offices, or there's incidents where we need to, it needs to be recognized where we're at in this large complex, and I'm a little concerned with voiceover that we'll be able to have that recognition. I don't know that we have it now to the extent we should, and I haven't seen that addressed yet, and I think that's an important consideration as we move forward also.
Mr. Chair, my understanding initially, I know that 911 was one of the concerns about voiceover IT. ITG has they have, I believe, fixed that concern, addressed it, as I said, at the Department of Revenue. And I believe it actually might provide some increased level of security with this because of the computer technology. I believe the proposal would be that it would actually get more information to the 911. So I think this proposal would improve that. And really, the pilot project that we're moving forward on will be available to fully address that. But thank you, but we'll keep that in mind. And Mr. Chair, I do have an answer to the Hoppe's question. Our proposed total investment cost is $375,000, but that is that assumes. But there still are some decisions yet to be made. For example, a big decision is changing telephone numbers, and that's something we'll simply have to have future discussions. discussions on as we move into the future.
Any other questions for Mr. Schweitzer or Mr. Adams?
Mr. Schweitzer, have you been in contact with these people? Have they given you any indication that Minnesota has already used it? But, you know, the subcommittee or whoever decides to make the rules to take a look at the committee?
Mr. Schweitzer.
Again, the Department of Revenue is fully converted and operational. That would be one source of information. Other companies are moving forward. I don't have a list right now, but I'll be glad to come up with a very list. Other state agencies are moving forward include the Public Utilities Commission, the MSRS, Labor Ministry. Those are the ones that occurred to me up the top of my head.
Thank you.
We may have that subcommittee work here. Any other questions, Mr. Schweitzer? If not, the chair will move approval of the budget as proposed. Any discussion? If there's
aye. Aye. Aye.